this podcast of The Secrets, the podcast for anyone who is serious about writing. Secrets Home can be found at www.stormwolf.com. For the next 15 minutes, we'll talk about writing and how to get you even closer to seeing your name on the spine of a book. Thanks for joining me for this fourth episode of The Secrets. I'm Michael A. Stackpole, and I publish a writing newsletter called The Secrets, and this is our fourth podcast installment related to The Secrets. The material that we cover right here does appear in The Secrets, so there's a lot more detail that we go to in the published magazine, and you can find it at www.stormwolf.com. Take a look at sample issues and decide if you want to subscribe. One of the things that gets covered in the magazine and that I have enjoyed sharing with you already here are what I refer to as the rules of writing. And the rule of writing for today is he said, she said. We've all read countless books where you have dialogue that runs along something like this. "Oh, it looks like you hurt yourself," she said. "I did," he said, "but don't think anything of it. I'm tough." "Okay, I won't," she said. "Come over here," he yelled, and so on and so forth. These are called dialogue tags. And the fact is, you do not need them. One of the problems with dialogue tags is that they just make the work very choppy. It's like having a big fat period or a big fat comma at the end of each sentence. You actually don't need it. There are a number of different ways that you can avoid this, and I heartily recommend all of them. And this is material that will make you a very good writer. I should note right here, this is advice that was given to me by a writer named Hubie Cave, who started his writing career back in the 20s and 30s and died a couple of years back. But he was a brilliant writer, and he pointed out you don't need these dialogue tags at all. There are really three ways to get around them. First, make sure that every character that you write has a unique voice, such that you know that this is the character who is speaking. If you listen to your friends, listen to people doing dialogue, all the time you hear verbal tags that we add in. If you listen to these broadcasts, if I haven't snipped them out, you'll hear "you know" or "ah" and appearing quite a bit. When you develop a character's unique voice, and I did this in one of my novels, in The Dark Glory War. In that novel, one character never used the pronoun "I," unless he was really, really surprised. So anytime you would hear a sentence going over there, where normally another character might say, "I'm going over there," this guy would just say, "going over there," you knew who it was without ever seeing a dialogue tag. And so that's one way to do it. Create a unique voice, a unique way that characters speak. And one of the things you'll find in dialogue, of course, is that more educated characters will use longer sentences and longer words. Less educated characters, smaller sentences, shorter words. They won't be as talkative. So that's a good rule of thumb just to use there. Second thing you can do, and I discovered this by reading the Nero Wolfe novels by Rex Stout, and I heartily recommend those because Stout was a genius, is that in a long-running dialogue, you have internal references to characters. In a dialogue where you would have Archie Goodwin, who was Nero Wolfe's secretary, assistant, and the raconteur of the stories, and Wolfe and a third individual, if the third individual was speaking, he would say, "Well, Mr. Wolfe, it began this way." That way we knew that this was the third character who was speaking. Or those characters would always refer to Archie as Mr. Goodwin, whereas Wolfe would refer to him as Archie. So you knew, again, who was speaking there. And Wolfe certainly did have a unique voice, as did Archie. So you get a double punch in that sense. The third way that I tend to use dialogue tags is to describe something about the character. Instead of "he said," I might begin something, "Jack fiddled with his hands nervously. I don't know if I want to go in there." Well, suddenly we know it's Jack that's speaking. It's prefaced by his fiddling with his hands nervously. And that avoids us using the dialogue tag of "I don't want to go in there," Jack said nervously. The temper of the character should be obvious in the words and how the character reacts. The other thing which is really cool about using dialogue tags that way is this. You avoid, and we've all seen this, stories where a character will pause in front of the mirror and look at himself and say, "Oh, I have dark hair, I have green eyes, I have whatever," and will describe themselves so the reader knows what they look like. I don't know about you, I don't very often do that in the mirror, just sit there and look at myself and describe myself to myself. There's no reason character should. So instead of his fiddling with his hands nervously, he raked his fingers back through a thick shock of black hair. That tells us the character's got a thick shock of black hair. Or he can discuss, do you think I ought to shave off my beard or not? Again, this gives you an image, this gives you material that you can work with, and you go forward there. Now, as I said, when you use dialogue tags or when you avoid using dialogue tags, it does make your work smoother. It is a mark of being a better writer. But there are times when you will want to use them. And the times when you want to use them is when you actually want a big fat comma sitting in the middle of a sentence. It's generally at the end of a chapter. It's generally when you want to shock the reader. So the sentence would run something like, I'm glad you made it out of the cave, he said, because the city's on fire. Well, you want that pause. You want the reader to anticipate it just for that half second it takes him to finally get over there and to see that. So there it is for you. The fourth rule of writing, he says and she says, eliminate them. Eliminate them as much as you can. I've got novels out there that are 200,000 words or more, and if they have a dozen of those in there, it's because I'm using them as the big fat comma, or in a couple of cases, the editor put it in, and I really couldn't see any way around taking it out. You don't need them. Cut them out ruthlessly, and your work is going to sound a lot smoother, and you, especially when you have characters that have a unique voice, your whole thing is going to work much better. It'll make you a better writer, and that's what the rules of writing are all about. Welcome back to the second segment of The Secrets. This is a segment where I would love to be answering your questions about writing, or, you know, if you've been working on a project and have a problem, I'd love to be able to help you solve some of those problems. In lieu of that, I do want to discuss some things which pick up from the second segment, actually in the last show, because I realized there were some things that I kind of covered rather cavalierly and sort of expected everybody to understand. I talked about drafts, and I talked about doing multiple drafts and how the first draft would be sort of laying down the skeleton, and the second draft would be muscle, and the third would be kind of cosmetics and flesh. And that really needs expansion, because I'm using terms that writers tend to understand, and they do need to be explained. By skeleton, what I mean is in that first draft, you're going to be laying down your plot. You're going to be laying down the event arc. You're going to be making sure that the world actually works and things flow correctly. There are lots of times when we're planning a book and we think it's going to go one way that things don't go that way. Or you were going to have one character do one thing and another character do another thing, and you suddenly realize, as you're looking it over for a second draft, that those two things those characters were going to do could be done in the same place or at the same time. These two characters could have been on either side of a battle or on either side of an auction or in the city at the same time and have different perspectives on the same things going. So in that, you get that first draft, you get stuff down, and then you're making your corrections to make sure that it's all skeletally correct, the limbs are straight, because that's then when you can begin to layer the other material on top. For muscle, what I end up meaning is this is where you complete your characterization of the characters. This is where you make sure their development goes smoothly. If you have a story about a character who's afraid of dogs, then you know in the beginning of the story you're going to have to show why he's afraid of dogs. Someplace after that you're going to have to show an incident with dogs that reinforces the fact that he's afraid. And at some point you're going to have an event which is a catalytic event that shows him why he wants to get over this fear of dogs. And through that catalytic event and his getting over that fear of dogs, or his being destroyed because he succumbs to this fear of dogs, you know, that's going to be your story. So you want to make sure that that progression is smooth, and you want to make sure that you've got all those little details hit. Lastly, with cosmetics and flesh, this is where you make sure that all the little details sync up. If on page 45 you chop off somebody's left hand, you make sure that on page 95 it's still chopped off, or it's been somehow magically grafted on. That sort of thing, that continuity kind of thing, is very, very important. I mentioned a little bit earlier that editors will sometimes insert material, and there are a lot of writers who have an adversarial relationship to editors. Editors are just there to make the product better. And while it may sound like everything they tell you is a dictate, editors are very good, at least in my experience, they are very good about telling you why they want you to make a change. repeatedly in the course of doing novels, I've had editors to say, why don't you include this? Well, I don't want to include that. But I go back and I ask them, what was the desired effect? Why do you think I needed that? And when they tell me why, to humanize a character, to explain something more closely, I can generally find something else to put in there that will, in fact, fit the bill right there. So working with editors, it's an experience where, again, they're trying to make the books better because it looks good for them. And most editors, despite what some writers think, do tend to like what they do tend to like producing fiction. And so it's good to have an editor, and I think every writer needs one. I've done 30-plus novels, 37 I think are in print now. I still need an editor because I have things going on in my head that complete portions of the book and that they're not on the page. And without those things that I've got in my head eventually making it to the page, it doesn't make any sense. So those little idiosyncrasies, editors are great at catching. I also noted last time that you wanted to have a novel that runs between 90 and 120,000 words, and you really don't want to get beyond that. And yet, you could say, well, look at Robert Jordan's work, or look at any number of novels which are out there, including my own. Fortress Draconis is my largest novel, and that was 218,000 words. The difference between me doing that, or Robert Jordan doing that, and someone trying to break in, is that we've got track records, and so publishers are willing to risk that money on those things. My very first novel, Tally and Revenant, came in at 178,000 words. My agent diligently sent it out, and everybody who looked at it said, geez, this is great, but it is too big for a first novelist. We're not going to take a chance on a first novelist on a book of that length. So what ended up happening? The book got published 11 years later, and this was after I'd done the first of the Star Wars novels, after they had hit the New York Times bestseller list. Then, all of a sudden, this book was not too long for a first novelist, since I wasn't a first novelist. Now it was an okay book. It was a big book. They could publish it. It was no different than it had been 11 years before, but now it was okay. So try and keep your books in that length, like say 90 to 120. That's actually a good length for your protagonists, and we'll talk a little bit more about this sort of thing. And again, if you have any technical questions, please let me know, because I'm here to help you guys, and I hope that this is fairly useful for you. Welcome back to our third segment of The Secrets. This is a segment where I like to rescue obscure words from oblivion. Today's word comes from The Superior Person's Third Book of Well-Bred Words by Peter Bowler, and the word is drumble. And drumble means to move slowly, reluctantly, and sluggishly. And the example that Peter uses is the movement of a teenager toward the dinner table. It's kind of that sullen, slumping, slump-shouldered walk. And I love the word. I think it's a delicious word. So that's one I think you should use in everyday conversation, and people will look at you and think that you're absolutely brilliant, which is also part of being a writer. One quick note that I do want to make about obscure words. If you have any you'd like to share, please send them in. I have to say, this is another reason why I actually like having a dictionary and just being able to browse when I need words as opposed to using one online. Nothing wrong with a computer-based dictionary, but somehow for me it's a lot more satisfying to go through and have the little illustrations catch your eye and you find weird words that you decide somehow you've got to slip into work. Lord knows I've done that repeatedly and have never really been upset, except for a couple times when the editors wanted me to take them back out because, as they pointed out, nobody possibly would know what they meant. Before I get to all the boring legal stuff, I'd like to say thanks to Michael and Evo over at DragonPage.com for their help in getting me set up to do all of these podcasts. I'd like you to go over to PodcastAlley.com and please vote for The Secrets. I'd like to thank the guys at PodcastBunker.com for having given us a 5-star rating, and we're going to really work hard to keep our level of quality up to deserve that rating. Of course, this podcast is copyright 2005, Michael A. Stackpole. You can reach me at thesecrets@stormwolf.com. The website, of course, is www.stormwolf.com. Please keep an eye out for A Secret Atlas, a book of mine which is on sale right now. I hope all of you are going to work hard on your writing. I look forward to talking to you in another week. And until that time, good luck with your writing.